You are listening to the Night and Day podcast, featuring the interview archives of Western New York music writer Tom Jennings. Tom has interviewed some of the biggest names in music and entertainment, and now you can enjoy these never-before-heard interviews. Here's your host, Tom Jennings.
Welcome to Night and Day. This is Tom Jennings, your host. And first, I guess I have to apologize for not keeping up with all these episodes. And, you know, so I kind of have to get around to recording them when I get an opportunity to record them. And even today, not being the most opportune time here in Western New York, I've got my next door neighbor mowing his lawn. So if you hear something in the background, that's a lawnmower. So I don't have the most silent studio on the planet. So I apologize for that. Anyhow, today's episode is one I had posted something on social media to see which old interview recording that people wanted to hear. And this was the one that they seemed to overwhelmingly want. It was Tommy Chong. That's my neighbor's lawnmower getting even closer. This is where you really know that I'm just some guy sitting in a bedroom in Albion, New York, which is a really small town in the middle of nowhere. Actually, I think he stopped finally. Anyhow, Tommy Chong was coming to a place called the Riviera Theater in North Tonawanda, which is a suburb of Buffalo. And I'll be honest with you, I was really surprised that I had the opportunity to interview him. I mean, there are certain stars, celebrities, whatever you want to call them, that always seem a bit out of my league. And I always felt Tommy Chong was one of those guys. I mean, you know, I grew up listening to the Cheech and Chong albums, and I had a friend of mine, Eric Sterling, who, I don't know if he'll ever listen to this episode. Maybe he will. And if he does, hi, Eric. But Eric and I went and got tickets to see the Cheech and Chong reunion show in Rochester, New York. And, you know, funny story, there was a security guard that was outside, and there were some people smoking some things that you would expect to be smoking at a Cheech and Chong concert. And they were getting a little paranoid about the security guard coming up. And, you know, once he came up to our group, the guy just reeked of alcohol. And at the end of the show, he wound up going backstage somehow. I'll tell you, this interesting thing about Cheech and Chong is that there was a whole group of people that were just hanging out backstage hoping to meet them. And they did their, you know, expensive little meet and greet paid thing, which is probably, you know, a couple $100. And then they just, anybody that happened to be hanging out backstage or by the backstage door in Rochester, they just let them through. And this security guard guy, I mean, he was, you know, he's funny. We're talking to him online. He talks about how he was a former drug addict and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he just reeked of alcohol. I mean, he was clearly on the job drunk, doing parking duty for Cheech and Chong. So I don't know. Maybe I find that story a little bit more humorous because I lived it than you will. But anyhow, Tommy, this is his son is the one who kind of handles his career, handles his publicity, I guess. And he was the one that handled this phone call. And Tommy's, it does, I will pre-warn you, there's a break in the middle. We had an issue with the phone connection. I can't remember if it was on his end or my end. I was actually conducted this interview from my old office when I used to work for a not-for-profit agency that helped troubled youth, Hillside. I don't have a lot of great things to say about Hillside, but, you know, it gave me an opportunity. I had some flexibility at that time, even though probably one of the worst bosses that I ever worked for in my life was there. But this was one of the few things I can look back on, and that job in a town called Lockport that actually makes me smile even a little bit. So anyhow, I hope you enjoy this interview. I hadn't listened to it in a long time. There's a kind of a funny story about my son Trevor, and we were able to share this interview with him in the car at one point, and he hadn't heard it, and he got quite the kick out of it. And that's about it. Again, if you have any questions or comments, you want to email me. If anybody's out there listening, it's Tom, T-H-O-M, at CoroniaMediaGroup.com. Or maybe if you want to mow your lawn next to me, I don't care, whatever you want to do. But anyhow, here he is, the legendary Chami. Oh, that's my dog trying to get it down to the legendary Tommy Chong. Hello?
Tom. Is this Paris?
Yeah, this is Paris. Yeah, I got Tony's phone for you. Hold on one second.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Hello.
Hey, Tommy, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. That could be the worst first question I've ever asked anyone in an interview in my life, so I apologize for that.
You didn't have your professional cap on, is that it?
I guess. I don't know that I'm all that professional anyway. I mean, I write for a newspaper near Niagara Falls, New York, part-time, so, I mean, it is what it is, but...
Hey, listen, someone has to live there.
That's true. Well, we're looking forward to having you guys come out. You're coming out to North Tonawanda, New York, on Friday with Cheech Marin. And I guess the first question I'll just ask is, you know, I know it's been a few years now, but can you talk about what brought you and Cheech back together and what that meant to you?
Well, you know, I never really left. Cheech left his acting career. And I sort of just waited around and, you know, learned how to do stand-up and so when the time was right, you know, and he was ready to come back, it all worked out fine.
And, I mean, you guys, I mean, did you maintain a fairly close friendship in the years when you guys weren't doing the stand-up together?
Well, you know, we're brothers. We're closer than brothers. And so there was... You know, I always knew what he was doing. He always knew what I was doing. And we would even, you know, talk to each other through the media, you know. And I was always, you know, in his corner. He was always in mine, you know. We just went separate. We actually divided and conquered America, because had we stayed together, we would have been, we would have been history. You know, would have been old news. But the fact that we broke up when we did, we left a lot of people wanting more Cheech and Chong. And when we got back together, it just worked out perfectly, you know, because now everybody, you know, there's a lot of anal people out there that, you know, they can't stand the salt being away from the salt, the pepper shaker, you know?
Yeah.
And so when we got back together again, it was a big relief for a lot of anal people.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting because comedy is often a solitary thing. I mean, your wife, I got to see you guys, and your wife Shelby opened up, and she does it. She just does a hilarious opening set. But, I mean, you have to admit the chemistry between two people is so important, and there just haven't been there's been some comedy duos that have worked really well, but I can't think of anyone since you guys that really have been as successful a duo.
No, because it's a business, you know. It was a business, you know. With Cheech and I, we it was very freaky the way it happened. I've always had partners, you know, but usually in bands, you know. Like I'd team up with some singer, and we'd put a band together, and then that band would fall apart, and the singer would, you know, get other things going. And I've always had a partner. Even before I had a band, I always had a funny guy that I hung with. And I was like, I was instigator, you know. I'd always get my partner to be doing funny things. And when Cheech and I met each other, it was like very, very cosmic, you know, because he moved up to where I grew up. And he knew about me before we even met. And then when we did meet, it was a very, very special. There was stuff very special. Now I think really that we were meant, you know, because we're so connected to the marijuana thing. You know, I believe that the forces that power the universe wanted, you know, wanted us to introduce hemp to the world in a non-threatening, non-violent manner, in which we did, and it just worked out, you know. And I think that was our mission. I think that's why, you know, that Cheech and I were meant to be together. The universe wanted the world to be turned on to hemp.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because, I mean, you've certainly seen the evolution of the acceptance of marijuana and hemp and all those other things. And I think when you guys first burst on the scene, there was two very different camps as far as when it came to marijuana. Don't you think that, I mean, even though there are people that are really opposed to marijuana legalization, that there's more of a middle ground now than there was when you guys first came out?
Well, yeah, there was the ones that oppose it. They're opposing it. You know, they're the police people that, you know, that love that law where they can just, you know, arrest people for smoking a flower. You know, they love that law, you know, because it really goes against the Constitution, you know, and it's a racist law. And so a lot of racist people, you know, they oppose, you know, any kind of legalization. But they're a minority now, you know, and it's the same as the hemp plant itself. You know, there's a lot of oil, you know, Dow Chemical, a lot of chemical companies and a lot of pharmaceutical companies that are, you know, wringing their hands trying to figure out how they can put a patent on the hemp plant. But forget it, it's not going to happen. And so yeah, there's a lot of forces, but the force of hemp has proved to be such a good medicine. I mean, it actually heals cancer. It helps people with Alzheimer's disease. It helps people with MS. I mean, this is no joke. And it's other than the poison that the medical profession have been hoisting on people for years now. You know, and so it's more serious than you know, just, you know, a couple of guys getting high, you know, and giggling at stupid things, you know. There's a very economic shift that's going to happen, and it's happening now.
And you speak from personal experience. I mean, you're going to, I mean, the last I read, you were going through a bout with prostate cancer, and you were taking a hemp supplement, like a hemp oil, and that was effective treatment, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and it's very effective. I mean, I've been tested, and I officially don't have cancer anymore.
Oh, that's excellent.
So, and I'm not going to say that it was, you know, just because I did hemp or the hash oil, but it certainly didn't hurt. And the results speak for themselves. You know, I'm not going to stand up and say, you know, this is a cure, because if I did that, I'd go to jail again. You know, because of the laws that the states have. But I will say that, you know, I'll just say the truth. I had it, and a year later, I don't have it. So everybody can figure it out. And I treated it with hemp.
I mean, and you touched on the jail thing, too. I think most logical people that watched everything that went down with your, with the way that the legal system dealt with you just thoroughly scratched their head. I mean, that whole experience, I don't know that you could even describe it, but even from an outsider's point of view, it just seemed so bizarre, especially if nothing else, because you were a celebrity, and people have the misconception that, oh, celebrities get off from anything. I think in this case, your celebrity status actually worked against you.
Well, it did, but what it did, what I really did, I outed the system. I mean, you got to remember, the people that put me in jail said about, and they took America to war, two wars, you know, based on lies, you know, the weapons of mass destruction lie, you know, and that was the same time that they put me in jail. For shipping a bong across the state line, which I never did, you know, and they knew it. They knew all this, but they couldn't lose space.
Thank you for calling in, Laura. I'm going to request put you on speaking on my 50.
Yeah, can I have room 3513, please?
What's the last name, sir?
It should be Chong.
Hold on, please.
Thanks. Hey, thanks for going to all this trouble, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. So where did I get with the answer?
Well, we were just talking. I was just talking about the system and how you were, because of your celebrity status, it actually worked against you as opposed to, in many cases, it being helpful to somebody. And you'd started talking about how the people that were against you were the people that, you know, told the lies about the Iraq War and, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Well, we're obviously dealing with some monumental lies, and I was supposed to be a diversion. You know, they kind of had planned. They were looking for people to protest like they did the Vietnam War. You know, and so they were like doing a preemptive strike against me, and the whole industry, you know, the bong industry and the smoking industry. And when they did all their searching and that, you know, the only guy they come up with that had any kind of visibility nationally was myself. And so they had to find a way to save face and to come up, justify the $12 million they spent. And so they were out to get me. And it was you think about it, it's the United States government. When they're out to get somebody, you know, you don't have much of a chance. You know, so what I did, I didn't fight it. They were ready to, they were praying I would fight it, you know. And then they would just stall and just run me, you know, broke. They would break me. And so I never fought it, and I did the opposite. And then all of a sudden, they had to face the truth of what they did. And they just took a beating from all the press, everybody, right wing, left wing, everybody. There wasn't one soul, I don't think, that justified. Oh, Bill O'Reilly said, yeah, the reason I went to jail was that I had 17 priors. And that was a lie, because I had no prior arrest record whatsoever. And that was the only one that sort of stuck up for. And then O'Reilly went on and you know, he made amends. You know, he tried to correct it. You know, but as usual, you know, when they correct something, it's never publicly. You know, it's always on the back page or something.
Well, I mean, if there's anybody that I would not want on my side, it would be Bill O'Reilly. So I suppose that works out.
No kidding.
No kidding. Your wife does part of her opening routine, at least when I saw you in Rochester, New York, a couple years back. Shelby talks a lot about the whole process and has really been able to use it to make some great jokes. I mean, but for a while there, was it even too difficult to use as, you know, part of your act?
Well, no, not at all. You know, because I worked right up until I went into jail. And in fact, we had a big going into jail party in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where they presented me with a cake with a file in it. It was pretty funny. And no, we just treated it, you know, like a celebrity pot bus that was just going to show, you know, the authorities that I'm not the guy that they hoped I was. And then when I was in jail, the government tried to set me up, you know. I got offered pot every day, almost every day that I was there. There was someone offering me a joint. And then they would drug test me soon after I got offered, you know. And so I beat them for 3 years. I never smoked nothing, and I got away, I got a clean record. It was good.
Well, and I won't take up too much of your time. I'll throw a couple of kind of quirky questions at you. I took an online poll this morning when I was preparing for this interview of which Beatle that you had pot with. And I had actually picked Ringo, but it turned out it was Paul. I still find that to be kind of funny, because Paul, like you said, is the guy that you associate with it the most. But
well, yeah, Paul got busted in Japan with it. Paul was the pothead of the group. Oh, it was funny. And he's the only guy, well, I haven't met Paul yet, you know.
Well, there's certainly still time. He's touring, so.
Yeah. I might. He's on my bucket list or my pot list, my bong list.
And One of my favorite movies of all time, Up in Smoke, which I'm sure is a lot of people's favorite movies. Just hilarious. You know, one of my favorite part is where you know, you talk about the dog eating the stash and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How long did it take you guys to write that stuff? And I mean, I think that was mostly your comedy albums that kind of a culmination of that stuff, wasn't it? Or,
well, it was their live act. You know, just like you said, you saw Shelby do her live act. You know, it was our live act that we had known maybe over 10 years. And so when we got to do it in a movie, you know, it was pretty well, it was long, you know, I mean, it was the whole bit was almost 30 minutes, you know, so it went from like 2 minute bit to a 30 minute bit.
And so when you and Cheech got back together to do the stage act, you brought a lot of that stuff back, and was it just really fun revisiting that stuff?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but it's a challenge too, you know, because you have to update everything and you have to change everything, and then you look for new stuff, you know. So the live act is really getting exciting now, you know, because we're on the same wavelength kind of thing now, you know. And so it's getting exciting, and we're getting more into music, you know, than we've ever have been. And that's what we wanted to do. That was our whole initial plan, you know, eventually, to be able to do half a concert of comedy and another half music. And that's what we're going to be doing with these bands coming up, you know.
Yeah, that's a great set. Well, it's funny that one of my earliest memories, gosh, 35 years ago, was a close friend of mine named Charlie. He did a version of I Was Framed, which... just a great song.
Well, that's funny.
And I know when I saw you guys, you did a whole kind of a tribute to a blues artist, if I remember. You were playing the guitar and everything. It was just a lot of fun.
Oh, the Blind Melon Chitlin.
Yep, that's the guy.
Yeah, the Blind Melon Chitlin. Yeah. Brian's been to rehab now. He's pretty coherent now. It's working out good.
Well, listen, hey man. I mean, this has been an absolute thrill of a lifetime. I am very excited to see you guys again, because I've seen you before when you come to North Tonawanda, and this is one of those few interviews in life that I can check on my bucket list. I got to talk to and interview Tommy Chong, and my son Trevor came with me to the last show. We've got a picture of you and Cheech backstage in Rochester where we had a chance to meet you. So.
Good.
Yeah, so that was very cool. He jokingly wanted me to ask you because I mistakenly knocked over his giant glass bong and smashed it. And he said,
"Oh no,
man." He said, "Well, you need to talk to Tommy Chong and see what he would say, you know, if he did that to his son." So.
Well, my son was the one that owned that ran the bong company that we had, so he would have just made another one.
Well, my son can't make another one, so he was just kind of upset about it, but, you know.
Oh, well, hey, bongs happen.
Well, very good. I'll let him know you said that, or I'll have to play back the audio recording for him. I'm sure it'll be a thrill. But great. Well, have a very safe trip out here. And I think the best thing that came out of this interview is hearing that you're cancer free. That's just fantastic.
Yeah, that makes me feel good every time I wake up too.
Yeah, that's what my dad died of. So you know, it's something that certainly hits close to home. So I'm very glad to hear that whatever it was that healed it. You know, God bless you, and I hope you have a ton more years making a lot of people like me laugh.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. And come by and say hi to us, okay?
I absolutely will. I'll email Yvette and see if she can make that happen for me.
Sure.
Okay.
We can make it.
All right. Very good. Thanks. Bye.
All right, well, there you have it from the studios here in lovely Albion, New York. That was Tommy Chong. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview. And as you can hear in the background, my neighbor is still mowing his lawn. My dogs are still hanging out in the other room and trying to be as quiet as possible, doing their best job. But I'll try to be a little bit more vigilant. It really just depends on the listens. If you guys keep listening, I'll keep putting them up. And I've got some other interviews in the tank. I've got some things that I, as I said, definitely the whole purpose of this podcast was to put up some things that really don't exist anywhere else. And I've used them for feature pieces, and they have just kind of gone by the wayside. All right, until next time, this is Tom Jennings from Night and Day saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you when I get up another episode. And don't forget to mow your lawn.